Well, good morning. Welcome. It's Friday. It is the 6th day of November. It seems like it's the 370th day of November, ladies and gentlemen, but it is only the 6th day of November, and here we are on a fine Friday morning. I welcome you all. I hope you are doing well. I hope you are. Sarah LeDuc has written many emails to people reminding them to stay hydrated. I hope you are hydrated. I hope you are. I know probably sleep was not an option for many of you. If it was, God love you. It's we have a lot to talk about this morning. I'm very excited, perhaps not for the reason that you think I am, but I'm very, very excited because after months and months and months of an election season, a grueling, grueling election season, finally, David Soares is back on our show. And I could not be more happy about that. This election has pissed me off in many ways, but one of the ways is that it took David Soares out of our rotation. I am pleased to tell you he is back this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce everybody. Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good. You beat me to it. I was going to say there were two things that were making me a happy person today, and one that not so much. The greatest thing, of course, was the fact that David Soares is returning to our fold, and to me, that's terrific. I mean, I really love that man. And then also, there's this presidential thing which made me happy, or is making me increasingly happy. The dental surgery I had yesterday, not so much, but otherwise, all great. A great day for all of us.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. So is the dental surgery? Was it real dental surgery, or are you referring to the presidential news conference?
No, I'm referring to real dental surgery.
Oh, real dental surgery.
By a master dentist, by the way.
That's probably
who did a terrific job. And nevertheless, dental surgery is dental surgery.
Yes.
And that's the way
it is. And yet still perhaps better than the president's briefing yesterday. But we're glad you survived, thank goodness. Well, good morning, everybody. And Alan, thank you. Great to have you aboard. David Soares is the Albany County District Attorney. So David was running for re-election, and FCC law, and for all reasons above board, David is not allowed to be on air when he is actively running for a race. So even though he did not have a declared opponent in the fall race, he still had someone on the ballot. He was not able to join us. So the election was Tuesday. Today is Friday, the day he's normally with us. We could not be more thrilled to welcome him back. Man, you have 7 months of stuff
to unload this morning. I didn't know that I was, off the radio because of the election. I thought it was because of my dancing in the studio that some could say is a bit offensive. I thought Judy Vink may have said something, but I got to tell you guys, I've missed you guys so much. I've missed this show, and I love what you've done with this virtual studio. I think the fuchsia is a little bit much, and the singing trout on the wall. We'll have to talk about that. But I love you guys. I miss you, and glad to be with you today.
Well, we love all of our panelists, but we love you, and we're just so happy you're back. And it just hasn't seemed right without you, and we're thrilled that you're back with us. Former EPA regional administrator, visiting professor at Bennington College, president of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enck is here as well. Hello, Judith.
Good morning. I also want to welcome David back and point out that he orchestrated his return, not just on this historic day, but within minutes of Joe Biden pulling ahead in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it was a pretty good timing. Yeah.
Well done, David.
Yeah. He knows how to make an entrance, doesn't he, Judith?
Yes.
Hey, Aaron Pisidia is with us as well. He's professor of economics at Siena College. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing well. This is a great day to have David back. And it's a reminder to the NPR audience that I think I said that if he got reelected, I would get a tattoo of his face on my back. So,
when does it start?
Well, when you do that, you let us know, and we'll go live.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe we could make that part of the next
absolutely
fundraising campaign.
Yeah.
We can have you standing right next to Roger Stone, both of you showing your tattoos.
That's how much I love David.
Well, we're very thrilled. You already have impressive ink, but that would be lovely. A wonderful addition. All right. Well, here is where we are. Let's start here, and we'll talk about what has happened, where we were 24 hours ago to where we are now. So, what is similar to yesterday when I went through this is that there are still six states in play. Those six states: Alaska, North Carolina, Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. What is different today than what was the case yesterday is that in those four states, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Arizona, we assume and greatly believe that both Alaska and North Carolina will go into the win column for the president of the United States. But Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Arizona are now all being led by former Vice President Joe Biden. In Georgia, he has a 1,097 vote lead. In Pennsylvania, just moments ago, about 22 minutes ago, he went over, and it's 5,587 votes. In Nevada, 11,438 vote lead. In Arizona, a 47,052 vote lead. What is important to note, especially in Pennsylvania and in Georgia, there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of votes that are still available. We're waiting for totals because there have been various data dumps throughout the night, and people are just arriving to work in some cases to get an actual number of how many votes remain. We have not been able to get a firm number, but let's say tens of thousands of votes that remain in both Pennsylvania and Georgia are all coming from predominantly blue and Biden-friendly areas. Although even in the places, because you have three types of votes, you have early voting, you have day of voting, and you have mail-in voting. So what we're seeing now is the counting of the mail-in votes. These are votes that in most cases arrived well before Election Day, but are just now being counted. Now, because of that, we expect those numbers, the 1,097 vote lead in Georgia, to improve, maybe by not a lot, because there aren't that many votes left, but certainly in Pennsylvania, that margin will probably increase by quite a great deal. In Arizona, the opposite is happening, where votes that are coming in are actually proving to be beneficial to the president, and they are lowering Joe Biden's lead, but not by a lot, and in some cases 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 votes. He has a 47,000 vote lead in Arizona. And in Nevada, they're the outlier. For some reason, they get away with not counting their votes until like Sunday. So I have no idea, but it may not matter, because if Pennsylvania or Georgia are called, then it's pretty much game over. And the president, the vice president of the United States, has enough electoral votes to become president of the United States, the magic number being 270. So that is where we stand right now. Of course, the president is threatening legal action. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the press conference or the briefing. It wasn't a press conference. It was a briefing yesterday. And what that it was, if nothing, it just tells us what we're up against as a nation over the next several days, weeks, and perhaps even months. So that's where I believe it stands at this moment. And Alan, let's go to you first.
Well, look, this is the most important election this country has ever had. We were, in my opinion, on the verge of going totalitarian/fascist. This president put all his marbles into creating that kind of a division in this country, and it didn't work. And the reason it didn't work is we are now at a point where people of color, people who are black, people who are brown, who have been approaching the majority status in the United States, are finally there. Now, did everybody vote who could have? No, on those terms. Nevertheless, it was incredibly important. And I know, because I know what happened at my house, that there was sleeplessness, there was terror if the president had won. And it doesn't look, because it's not over yet, like the president is going to win.
Well, and to your point, Alan, I mean, it doesn't look like the president's going to win because of the numbers, but also because how the president is acting. And we'll get into that in a moment. But it is
he had what we could only call a Captain Queeg moment yesterday.
Yes,
with the balls in his hands, the silver balls that is, in his hands, and you know, doing what he did, and everybody is really on his case for that.
There's one little asterisk I want to point out, and I mentioned this yesterday. I'd like to point it out again today. If you look at several, for people who are confused, and I just bring this up because we got several letters on this yesterday. Right now, the electoral count, by most measures, is 253 Joe Biden to 213 Donald Trump. You right. will see places that are reporting Joe Biden with 264, needing only six Electoral College votes to win the 270 number, and the president with 214. The reason that exists is because the Associated Press and other news organizations, including Fox News, called the state of Arizona, which remains in play, which we mentioned a moment ago. They called Arizona on election night. That infuriated the president. It also infuriated a lot of pollsters and, quite frankly, the election officials in Arizona weren't exactly ready for the onslaught that they got because they also realized that it was a very close race. But regardless, you may see two sets of numbers. I just when I went into on Yahoo a moment ago, they have it as 264 to 214. But if you take out Arizona, that is the discrepancy and why there is a discrepancy. David, I've waited a long time to ask you a question. So here it is. What do you make of what we're seeing?
Well, you know, I think we will have an opportunity to see a lot more once this is over. Quite honestly, what I'm viewing is probably a little bit different than what most Americans are viewing. I mean, all of us are paying attention to the numbers. First and foremost, I want to say that, you know, this COVID experience that we're all living, this dark cloud that we're all living under, has really, really demonstrated how heroic people that we don't necessarily see every day and think of every day. And those are the people that are like working around the clock, you know, counting these votes. The people who are working at the various boards of election throughout the country, they're just doing such an incredible job under the most, you know, serious of stresses. But what I'm looking at with this campaign and the results that we're seeing is definitely a repudiation of Donald Trump, but I'm not seeing this as an endorsement of a Democratic platform, and I say that for two reasons: A, the margins and how close these races are, and B, the fact that in this campaign the amount of money spent by the Democratic Party really proved that there was very little coattails in changing the dynamics of the Senate, and as a matter of fact, not doing as well in the House either. So those are the two things that I'm seeing. But I got to tell you, the other thing that just has me floored, and I've said this a number of times on your show, Donald Trump will, if you give him enough room, he will eventually do himself in. And the several months of just disparaging the ballot, the mailing ballot, and people being able to vote by mail, has not served him well. And I think what we're seeing right now, because the vast majority of these ballots that are coming in are leaning Democrat, I think he did this to himself against the counsel of all of his people that he usually listens, you know, closely to, those being Lindsey Graham and other members of his own party. But that's what I'm seeing.
You know, David, he could have won. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking this guy could have won if he wasn't such a jerk. I mean, his problem was he thought if he excited that base of his, that's all he would need. They would go to the polls, the other people wouldn't, and he would win. But if you, pardon me, you think if it was COVID and the rest of it and he'd done something intelligent, he could be president of the United States very easily right now.
One thing I would like to just, David, to tag on to what you were saying is that looking at the difficulties that other Democrats had on election night and why the Senate did not go the way that many expected it to go, that House seats were lost that were not expected to be lost, while that is, yes, damaging to the Democrats, it also damages the president's argument that there is widespread voter fraud when Republicans on the ticket did extremely well and he did not.
I think there are sirens and alarms going off right now in the Republican tent because he continues to hammer that. So because he is losing, he is now questioning the very process that has, as you said, been successful for, you know, his down ticket colleagues. And if you're Mitch McConnell, what are you thinking this morning? Every time this person tweets, every time he gets in front of a microphone, you've got to be grabbing your chair and you've got to be white knuckle just waiting for the words to fall from his lips.
Well, it's your first time back, and it's the first time I get to cut you off because we have to take a break. But when we come back, I'll let you finish your sentence and we'll go to the other panelists as well. I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politics. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares. David, I had to cut you off. We had to get to the news, and so I'll let you finish, and then we'll go to the rest of the group.
Joe, I'm a little distracted. I was listening to the news, and someone was talking about naked ballots.
Yes.
And I don't know who give these people. I don't know who creates these terms, but hanging chads and naked ballots. This is a family show, Joe. Control these things.
I like that we're using the word tranche a lot. I'm enjoying that one. Yes, the naked ballots are the ballots that are not put into the quote-unquote secretive envelope. So they are naked and they are not counted, which does not mean it's voter fraud. It just means that for the person who cast the ballot, it will not be counted. All right. So finish, David, and then we'll go around.
No, I actually, because I've been up all night for the last several nights, I'd lost my train of thought. So please, I can't wait to hear from Judith, because I'm sure Judith is celebrating the victory of one Susan Collins from the state of Maine.
You knew it was coming, Judith.
I knew.
Judith,
I knew it was going to come in the first half hour of the show. Thank you. Welcome back. Really.
Go ahead, Judith.
So I would like us to all take a deep breath and exhale and be joyful and be grateful. You know, by the end of the day, if not by the end of the show, Trump will be a one-term impeached president. And we will have Joe Biden as our elected leader. And we'll have Kamala Harris, the first woman vice president, the first Black vice president, the first South Asian vice president. This is a day of joy and gratitude. And I haven't cried yet, but I will. Thankfully, Joe, not on the show. But
we love tears. Go ahead.
So much at stake. I mean, the future of not just the country, but the world in terms of COVID, in terms of climate change, in terms of economic justice, and being hopeful about what the future holds for our kids and our grandchildren. And I think I think we want to remember, you know, Biden is leading Trump in the popular vote by more than 4 million votes. And that's not even having California and New York all counted up. Democrats have won the popular vote in 7 of the last 8 presidential elections. And I know that there's going to be all sorts of hand-wringing why, you know, this wasn't the landslide. And also, parents, don't let your children grow up to be pollsters. The pollsters are not having their finest week. But Biden flipped Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, likely Georgia. And I still think he's going to win Arizona. I agree with the Fox News AP call on Arizona. There's also incredible poetic justice in this moment. Biden won his childhood state of Pennsylvania. I think John Lewis is looking down at us smiling because it was his congressional district in Georgia that put Biden over the top in Georgia. And it looks like John McCain and Cindy McCain are having the last word in Arizona. So there are just certain days where things line up beautifully. And I know we have to talk about the irresponsible comments and behavior of President Trump. And I know we've got to talk about how we reach the 70 million people who voted for Trump. But this is such a great day. And so many people played a role, not just people who voted, but people who volunteered, people who donated, people who ran for local office, people like David. Anything people did to flex the muscles of democracy, it worked.
Just a
that was absolutely brilliant, Judith, and we are so lucky to have you. And I hope that when they make you secretary of something in this administration, we're going to be very bereft.
Back to the EPA you go.
No, I'm staying put with my tears on top of a mountain in Rensselaer County of tears of joy. This is just an amazing day.
You know, it is an amazing day, and you're absolutely right. We will have to talk about it, but you know, it is, and I'm not gonna burst. I'm right there with you. I agree with you 100%. You just also know you are bracing yourself for just how ugly it's going to be over the next several weeks. And that's, you know, so all the more reason to do, as you say, and to treasure this moment. We should just note the race has not officially been called for Joe Biden yet. However, while Georgia may not be called anytime soon because it is so close and there really aren't that many votes to be counted in Georgia. And the vote is the vice president is winning by, you know, just over 1,000 votes. So there will be a recount and that will be recalibrated. And I'm sure that will look. But I agree with Judith that it probably eventually will be called. But all it takes is the state of Pennsylvania. And it's just a matter of time. And I agree with you, Judith, that by the end of the show, probably there will be a call by the networks that Pennsylvania is going to Joe Biden, giving him the necessary 270. Aaron Pasitti, you are up next.
So just echoing what everybody else said, this is a giant relief. This is a a really pleasant feeling to have for the first time in a while, just a tinge of optimism. But I really think this has been an absolutely monumental failure for the Democrats and a remarkable success for Republicans. I'm still happy with the way things are going, and obviously I want a Biden-Harris presidency, but, you know, we're facing a pandemic that is not under control. There is a recession going on. There are race riots in the street. And the best we can do as a country is have a 4 million vote lead with Biden. So that tells me that this is going to be a very, very, very long road of not only fixing the damage of the last 4 years of the Trump presidency, but fixing the damage of the past four decades of neoliberal economic policy. That is a almost insurmountable tide to turn back, but this is obviously the first step. It has to start somewhere. Republican success over the past four decades started in the early 1970s, and there really was not, fruits of that effort that were visible until, the mid-80s and onward. So, I really think the damage that Trump did, even if he doesn't win, is going to be with us for a while. He has delegitimated almost every institution of the United States government, including the election process. He has fostered division. He has made he has legitimated an alternative reality if people want to believe it. This is a post-truth world we're living in, where words just don't matter. But I think that even Republicans see that this might be going too far. And you can almost hear, the crickets chirping with a lot of the Republican talking heads, in that they're not, coming out in full force to support President Trump. And I think that's because they see how successful Republicans were at maintaining seats in the Senate, in the House, the fact that the presidential election was this close. This is a huge victory for Republicans. I think a lot of sensible Republicans knew they were going to lose, and they're perfectly happy to sacrifice Trump for Biden and think about a more concerted effort that's probably more in line with traditional Republican strategies. So I'm a little less optimistic than Judith is.
Wow, way to burst Judith's bubble.
Give me the afternoon. Gosh,
we can have an hour, can't we, Aaron?
I'm sorry.
Can I say? I don't know if we're going to break or anything, but I just wanted to say one thing. Following both of my colleagues' comments, something. I got to tell you that the moment Judith started speaking, Judith, I'm pretty good at ribbing you, but the moment you started speaking, it really snapped me. I was hanging on every one of your words, because the cynical side of me had to give pause and sit back and listen to your words. And you're absolutely right. We have to be happy today. If you're a Democrat, if you're an American and you just want good government, we have to be happy today. But I'm also I'm going to take the day to do that. And I think that as a country right now, we seem to be forced into these false choices where you have to either be this or you have to be that. We can be both. We can be joyful at what's transpired today, but also, like Aaron has said, we just have to engage in some sober reflection after this and make decisions about what kind of country we're going to be. I'm looking at frustrated Trump supporters who, they're my neighbors. Like, I love these people, and I don't know where along the line Americans decided we weren't going to like each other based on, I have all these other qualities that I think are offensive and people shouldn't like, but my politics shouldn't be the reason why we don't speak. And I think, that the road is going to be very tough, because it's not just about Donald Trump. Donald Trump didn't come along in 2016. There were conditions that really were set all along the way to give rise to someone like this. And the venom that he's injected into the body politic for our country and our communities isn't something that's just going away quickly. And I think the courage that our Republican leaders have not displayed was countered by the courage that Americans displayed by going to the polls. But the work is ahead of us.
I want to remind everybody very quickly, Joe, I know you got to go to break, but I want to remind everybody that both Kavanaugh and Barrett are justices on the Supreme Court and that they worked assiduously to help fix the election for Trump the last time out. So I want to see what that court does, and I'd love to hear what David has to say about that, too.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the legal challenges and the accusations that the president is making. We have a terrific panel this morning: Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares. We will be talking to them until 11 o'clock this morning, and then we'll be going back to NPR coverage as this race starts to gel a little bit, and decisions will no doubt be made, and more numbers and more defining numbers will be coming in. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll continue right after this break. Well, in a torrent of falsehoods, Donald Trump yesterday claimed the election is being stolen. It was such a display that most television networks cut away from the statement that the president was making from the White House briefing room on the grounds that what he was saying was simply not true. As Maggie Haberman and Peter Baker write in the New York Times, even for President Trump, it was an imagined version of reality, one in which he was not losing, but the victim of a wide-ranging conspiracy stretching across the country in multiple cities, counties, and states involving untold numbers of people, all somehow collaborating to steal the election in ways he could not actually explain. Never mind that Mr. Trump presented not a shred of evidence during his first public appearance since late on election night, or that few senior Republican officeholders endorsed his false claims of far-reaching fraud. A presidency born in a lie about Barack Obama's birthplace appeared on the edge of ending in a lie about his own faltering bid for re-election. Mr. Trump said yesterday, if you count the legal votes, I easily win. He said that in a unusually subdued 17-minute televised, quote-unquote, statement from the lectern in the White House briefing room, complaining that Democrats, the news media, pollsters, big technology companies, and nonpartisan election workers had all corruptly sought to deny him a second term. This is a case where they're trying to steal an election, he said. They're trying to rig an election, and we can't let that happen. Alan, you left us with this point about the Supreme Court. My question to you is, given, for want of a better term, the unhinged nature of what the president is alleging, what possible argument could you make, legal argument, and we'll check in with David on this as well, but what possible legal argument could you make that would be strong enough to make its way to the strongest court in the land or the top court in the land?
Well said, Joe. I haven't got the slightest imagination what they could do. But what I would expect is going to happen is that the Trump people, they can't go to the Supreme Court and say, declare me president. That wouldn't work. But what they could do is to try to, you know, like a good barber, take a little bit off the edges here and there in order to show their loyalty to the man who they obviously assiduously worked to elect president of the United States, at least two of them. And it makes me nervous. And I go to I pass to David Soares.
I would like to I would just like to point out to one quote. There are many people who kind of smacked down the president. There were many who didn't yesterday, but let us take solace in at least Chris Christie, of all people, saying that I talk tonight not as a former governor, but as a former U.S. attorney. There's just no basis to make an argument tonight. There just isn't. David.
And there really isn't. I mean, look, so I'm a prosecutor here in Albany County. And
by the way, congratulations on the new term.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. I really appreciate what the voters have done for me and my family in this community. Albany is one of, like, baseball doesn't survive in Albany. Politics is our sport. And, you know, over the years, there's so many allegations about voter fraud that are made. And quite honestly, you have a state that is trying to encourage more people to vote, and they've made the process easier for people. And so those are the most difficult cases to prove because more often than not, people are not engaging in voter fraud. That's true of New York State. It is also true of the country. You cannot find voter fraud activities that would even muster, you know, the attention of our federal agencies. In this instance, you've got a person who's claiming that the predicate that he's laid over the last several months is that voting by mail is illegal. Well, every state has a process and manages a process where they make it convenient for people to exercise their most important franchise through the mail. And so you can't breathe these falsities into reality because you continue to repeat. We all know that he's the master at branding, but this one here is going to fall short. I will tell you the colossal error that this president has made, the colossal error, is continuing to bemoan the process of voting, you know, by mail. And he's done it to the point where his followers just out and outright, you know, won't do it, which is one of the reasons why you see all of these ballots that are coming in and the vast majority of them a Democrat. But your question was, you know, what are the odds that they can muster an argument that would be rejected or would be decided at a state court, at the state's highest court, which would then make its way up to the Supreme Court to give his people a chance to make a decision that would sway the election. Those chances are very, very little because of the lack of evidence that, in fact, you know, voter fraud has taken place. And something was wrong with the mail that has triggered this, you know, it's just such a big claim that it's almost laughable.
It could be laughable, except it's such a pattern of what the president does. He makes outrageous claims and then tries to find the evidence to support it.
And then the thing that he's tried to do is, one of the things that he's just tried to do, you know, we just stopped the count. Now everyone who's ever been involved in a campaign knows that you've got to allow for the count. You got to allow for them to finish the count.
Well, especially when you're behind and you hope that you'll get more votes. I mean, that was the crazy thing I didn't get. Stop the count in Michigan. I'm behind. If you keep counting, I may actually catch up.
Yeah, trust me. The senators that are sitting there in states that have runoffs at 49.7, those senators don't want The incumbent senators don't want that vote count to stop. They want it to keep going, and hopefully they get over that 50% plus one threshold.
So the question, Judith, I was leading to David, I think that so now what apparently the campaign is doing is they've set up this center, this triage center. They're asking for people, whoever has seen anything, to report it. They're taking those claims. So any voter who has witnessed something that was strange or optically weird to report it. And then with that information, we'll go forward to whatever legal fight may go on. The legal team is forming as we speak. But again, the question, and in your opinion, I'm interested in, okay, but what do you do? And I will note, we just have about a minute and a half before we have to go to a break.
Yeah, it's a pointless exercise, but it's good they're going through it because it'll keep them off the streets doing, you know, potentially physical damage. It's not going to the Supreme Court. I had real anxiety that between Amy Coney Barrett and Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh, you can always count on them to do the wrong thing on election law issues and their loyalty to Trump. But I don't see any path to the Supreme Court. I think this is just, you know, part of the psychodrama of the Trump presidency. I mean, this is a lock. You know, Jared Kushner was looking for his James Baker at the 11th hour, I might add, and instead he got Rudy Giuliani. So if you've got Rudy doing the election law strategy, we're good.
All right, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna go over to NPR News, and again, when we come back, we'll have an hour of conversation, and then we'll go back to NPR coverage as we continue to look at election 2020 and see some of the dust at least settle as the counts become a little more congealed. Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares are all with us this morning. We also welcome you to join us. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We have a lot of letters from you. I ask, please, that you keep them short and to the point, and we'll be able to get to most of them, I think, or at least the ones that we've selected. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares with you till 11 o'clock this morning. Then we'll head over to NPR coverage from 11 to 12 and then Midday Magazine at noon, bringing you up to date on all the election news and all the news around the land. We welcome you to our discussion if you are just joining us. And if you have been with us, we have been talking, of course, about the election and the moving ahead. I just want to take a moment, because I don't think we've said this, and that is because we tend to talk about the president and his outburst. But prior to that, Joe Biden took took to the stage in Wilmington, Delaware, and started to project the image of a guy who was about to become the president of the United States. He talked about the economy. He had meetings with his health advisors who were briefing him on the coronavirus pandemic. By the way, yesterday, more cases reported than any day since mm-hmm. the beginning of the pandemic crisis. So while we have rightfully been very, very focused on the election, that is still something that is continues to roar out of control. Joe Biden said that, look, you have to show a little bit of patience. And he said that democracy can sometimes be messy. I certainly understand his point. But really, when you think about it, for all the reasons that we all have been talking about this morning, things went pretty well, didn't they?
Except for the really long lines.
Well, I mean, yes.
And yes, overall, in terms of what we were bracing for, things did go very well.
Meaning if I cast a vote mm-hmm. that except as the aforementioned naked ballots that David brought up, the vote counted.
Yes.
Well, I think when normalcy has been absent for 4 years, it's refreshing to have someone of that stature come out and just calm things down. I think he did that for a number of reasons. Some of it self-serving, and some of it out of what he considers to be his civic responsibility. I think that this country, in the heated, you know, rhetoric that was going back and forth during the most important day for our democracy, passions running very high, it was so necessary for him to come out and just to call for calm, because those initial results, as you know, because Trump had called for people to go vote in person. And so I think we were all not surprised by, you know, the initial results, which showed him just winning in some important battlegrounds. But I thought that was brilliant, because not only did I think it worked to calm his supporters down and to set the right tone, but it also showed just how desperate we are for reason and that kind of leadership.
Alan, I'd love for you to comment on that, and also with the fact that we hear this hour that the Trump campaign has made it very clear that the president will not concede.
Well, he's not going to concede, because that's who he is. We always knew there was a danger he wouldn't leave, and that's still much on everyone's mind. This is a time when I don't really agree with so many people who think that this is just one stop and that next time Trump will come back and that he'll win. Nope. I think this was I would love to hear how Judith and David Noel feel about this. I think this was the election when all of a sudden everybody in America got in on it. And that means black and brown and everybody else. So that the word is written on the wall now. We are going to have a different kind of country and a different kind of electorate. And I see this election as being that camel's back.
So, and you're talking about the possibility that Trump comes back if the vote, and let's, you know, just say it hasn't been called yet for Joe Biden, but if the president loses, he's a one-term president, that he comes back in 4 years and tries it again.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, because they're already out there saying it.
Yeah.
I've been getting all kinds of email and
right.
stuff of that kind.
Yeah,
please, Judith. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with Alan. I mean, yeah, they're putting that out there, but Trump's never going to concede. I wouldn't be surprised if he started holding rallies again in the next week. But remember, he has enormous legal problems, and he no longer has the cloak of the presidency to protect him. He will try to self-pardon, and that might work on federal charges, but you still have the New York Attorney General and the Manhattan District Attorney that have open cases against him. Exactly. His businesses are on the brink of bankruptcy, if not already bankrupt. And you remember that those amazing Suzanne Craig and colleagues pieces in the New York Times that, you know, detailed his debt. And I don't know if the international banking community are going to look at him the same way today. And you think about, you know, what's he going to do next besides a lot of golfing and holding court in Mar-a-Lago? Well, you know, there's talk of him having a show on Fox, having his own station. Maybe he'll replace Rush Limbaugh. But that's not going to be enough for him. He needs the big adoring crowds. So I think you're going to see more super spreader events, sadly, all over the country. You probably saw Associated Press looked at the 376 counties with the highest number of new cases of COVID per capita. 93% of those counties voted for Trump.
There's one other thing.
He'll go back there and just do rallies. Yeah. Sorry.
And Judith, there's one other possibility of a place he could go, and that's the jail.
Right. Good chance. Mm-hmm.
David?
Yeah, I think the state and Manhattan DA charges are quite significant. He's going to be spending a lot of money on lawyers. His lawyer is not going to be Bill Barr. And hopefully, if he wants to stay out of jail, it won't be Rudy Giuliani. But, you know, I think his future is in the courtroom.
Aaron?
Yeah, I'd like to build on what Judith said. I think what we're witnessing now is Trump slowly losing and probably over the next 2 months completely lose institutional Republican support. He will have his adoring crowds. He will have his soapbox, even if he loses, assuming he doesn't go to jail. But, I mean, the concept of a second Trump term is preposterous. I just don't think the Republican Party would be willing to, having seen what he did the first term, support him for a second term. The first term is totally understandable. He's a populist outside candidate. People might have had their questions, but you really couldn't point to any, you know, history that he had with politics. You had a lot of, you know, middle class workers countrywide who lost faith in, you know, the effectiveness of government and institutions decades ago. So it's no surprise that he was elected. People wanted something different from, you know, the, you know, neoliberal politicians we had before. But having seen what he has done, I think very firmly closes the book on the possibility of him ever rising to any significant position of power. He will always have his base.
So if he's running against the same guys, Aaron, that he ran against in the primary the last time, and they called him all kinds of names, all most of which were true, by the way, and, you know, he prevailed over them. Now we see the crowds, we see the polls, Republicans sticking with him. Are you sure?
I am.
I think.
Go ahead, David.
History, we have a lot to learn from history, right? I mean, at the end of World War I, you had the Treaty of Versailles. And no one can doubt that those harsh conditions that were put on Germany gave rise to someone who continued to pour honey into the ear of the population. The damage that Donald Trump has inflicted in our country, although, like I said, the conditions were set for him to rise. The damage that he's done to cause further distrust and confidence in our systems, it's going to take a long time for us to repair the harm that he's and the wreckage that he's left behind. Now, both parties have a lot of questions to ask themselves. Like I said at the beginning, I don't think that this was a great day for Democrats. This was a repudiation of Donald Trump. But it was also not an endorsement of the Democratic platforms. I mean, I think, look, and I think Alan was absolutely right. People of color rose and walked to the polls to let their voices be heard. But there are several miscalculations. And I think as you go state by state, you have to ask yourself, how did the Democrats, you know, lose the Latino community in Florida? How did they lose the Latino community in Texas? You know, part of it has to do with Democrats taking, you know, those folks for granted. But I think Republicans have also taken, you know, Republican supporters for granted. There has to be a serious debrief and a deep dive into what's happened, and that has to happen state by state. You know, lastly, I'll say this. For me, it's just heartbreaking. It's 2020. We're going through a pandemic. And just to see the visceral, you know, the hatred in the eyes of people, it's just heartbreaking. And lastly, I'll just say this. The guy who interrupted the county clerk with a T-shirt that said barbecue, beer, and freedom, I actually agree with that guy. At least what was on his T-shirt, not what he was spewing. But anyway, that was my effort at Common Ground.
Let's go to some letters here, and we go to Anna, who says, "We who have inherited white privilege must go down on our knees and thank all the African Americans who voted, and then continue to do whatever we can, each in our own way, to eliminate systemic racism." Rick says, "The perspective that the Republicans have emerged victorious by virtue of winning some House seats is absurd. The Dems may win over 300 electoral votes and win the popular vote by over 6 million. The Senate looks like it will be determined in January in the Georgia Senate seat runoffs, and a state that looks like it just may hold blue. The hand-wringing is embarrassing. Hooray for Judith and bringing the proper optimistic perspective to the results so far, and they appear to be getting better."
And I just, on that letter, hats off to Stacey Abrams and everything she did in Georgia after she lost her race for governor narrowly. She went out and registered 800,000 people in Georgia. And I think she's the reason not only for Biden hopefully winning Georgia, but also, as the letter writer mentioned, two U.S. Senate races will be repeated in a runoff in January. And this is amazing. Reverend Warnock was significantly ahead of Loeffler in the race the other day. They just didn't get to 50%. And Ossoff is nipping at the heels of Perdue. Pretty sure that's going to be a runoff. So everyone who's kind of exhausted from politics and making phone calls and giving money, back on the horse Monday morning, off to Georgia. We got to win the Senate.
Yeah, January will be a lot of action, and it will be all in the state of Georgia. Joan writes to us and says, "Thank you, David, for pointing out that Trump alone did not create our divided nation. This has been a decades-long process. Trump gets far too much credit for this."
Pam? No, but he played to it, Joe. That's the whole point. We do know this. We do know this is the last holdout of the privileged white males in this country. No question. But come on now. You know, Trump saw his opportunity, as has been said, and he took it, and it was disgraceful.
Another David writes, "Do you think Trump will pardon himself on the bet that the Republican Senate won't bring it to the Supreme Court? They will just move on."
Yes.
George writes, "Hey, I saw a post that went like this. You and four friends are voting on what to have for dinner. Three people vote for pizza. The other two vote to kill and eat you. Even though pizza won, you know, there's still a problem there." it's a good point. Pam says,
I just want to say that, you know, all of us are, we might be celebrating a little too early. I don't know how many of you saw Trump's spiritual advisor, Paula White, speaking in tongues the other day. I would still be worried if I were you. You know, it was a pretty wonderful performance.
Nasty right hook.
How about Steve Bannon?
Talking about beheading Dr. Fauci has now been taken off of Twitter. I think a permanent ban, I think. It seems like maybe that's apt. I thought he was going to jail. No? Did I miss that? Wasn't he?
He's indicted.
He was indicted. Okay.
We have to do the trial.
Pam says, many of my friends chose to vote by mail because they were afraid to go to the polls. Donald Trump made them fearful that he would have protesters and watchers at the polls. Voters weren't afraid of the virus. They were afraid of being attacked at the polls. Well, whatever they were afraid of, it does bring up a very good point of the president saying yesterday that these votes are just magically appearing. No, these votes aren't magically appearing. They're being counted last because in many Republican state legislatures, that's what they voted to do. And second of all, they were put in legally. They, even by the attempts to screw up the post office, they arrived at the Board of Elections and they are now being counted. And that's the way it's always worked. Let's see. We'll go to Tony. Will military vote from overseas be significant in the Biden-Trump election? How much should we worry about the military mail-in ballots in this election? So my understanding of this, and please, panel, correct me if I'm wrong on it. My understanding is, so in that case, you request a ballot and the ballot goes out. Which is fairly, that's standard operating procedure. So they may, I think in most places, they have to come in. It differs in different states. I think in Arizona, it's by Tuesday. In Georgia, I think it's by today, by 5 o'clock. Anyway, they have to come back. They have no idea how many will come back. Sometimes it's 5%. Sometimes it's 10%. Sometimes it's 80%. So they really have no idea of how many they're going to have. I believe the number of 8,000 was the number in Arizona. I do not know what the number is in Georgia, although I did hear in Pennsylvania them say that it was a very small number that would probably not have a consequence on the election. So in Pennsylvania,
the military ballots have to be received by tonight.
Yeah, today at 5 o'clock. Right.
Remember, Biden was ahead with people in the military casting votes, and that's what led Trump to try to defund the long-term military newspaper Stars and Stripes about, you know, we forget all these assaults on democracy, but, you know, I think the military vote will be good for Biden.
To say nothing about what Trump has had to say about the military, which has not been very favorable. However, there are those people who think that, you know, that there is something similar about the Trump attitude towards authority and the military attitude. So we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Let's see. We have 30 seconds. Diana says, just to put some things in perspective, Trump received 4 million more popular votes than he did in 2016. We're not out of the woods yet. We're so divided, but thank goodness Biden will be in charge with a good team. Again, the election hasn't been called yet, but, you know, I'm with Judith. We'll take the good news where we have it. Also, in the very few seconds I have, while I totally agree with Judith's sentiments, we aren't there yet, and I'm worried about what happens right after with Trump and his minions calling for armed rebellion about the results. Also depressed about all the Senate seats still going Republican and the fact that with this close race and what it says of where we are as a country. We will pause there. When we come back, we'll do our final half hour with our panel. Right now.
Bye. though he never showed his face again. That's why your love keeps on lifting me higher, higher and higher. I said your love keeps on lifting higher and higher.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you all with us. Alan Chartok, Judith Enk, Aaron Pasitti, and our long-lost brother, David Soares, is back with us, and we are more than a little happy about it. We welcome you to join in on the conversation. Panel at WAMC.org will be with you for another 25 minutes or so. Then we're going to go back to NPR coverage. And as we wait for more votes and things start to congeal a little bit, and we're hearing murmurings that there could be some actual declarations and calling the states.
Certainty.
There you go. Certainty. 2.5 hours of sleep. I am. Okay, so let's see. We go to Lawrence, who says, "What does Alan mean? Trump's trending towards fascism didn't work. Whether he wins or Biden wins, it looks fairly successful. There is no repudiation, no blue wave, and almost half of Americans voted for him."
Well, from Alan's perspective, what I meant by that was this election, I think, is the definitive dividing line between various groups in America. I think Trump tried it. He tried to go to fascism. We know that. He talked about three terms, his own. He wanted three terms for himself.
Right.
He talked again and again about outrageous ideas that really, frankly, bring us back to the 1930s and Hitler and the rest. So the fact is that it didn't work. He's not elected. That's good. And now this country will never be at that precipice again, in my opinion.
We hope.
I just want to add on that point. I don't disagree, but after our joyful day and perhaps some afternoon day drinking, I do think that was a joke. Kind of. I do think that.
Just say, where are we meeting, Judith? Let's go.
I know.
Weather's nice.
I'm hanging out with you.
I can go to Posting Hill. Go ahead.
Yeah. Socially distanced, 10 feet apart.
Leave now.
But after we have our day, I am so concerned about the 70 million people who voted for Trump in this election. I kind of understand why some people did 4 years ago. They thought Hillary was going to win. He was a reality TV show. A lot of his TV fans voted for him. But this time, people saw who he was and saw his policies.
They knew what they were getting, right.
And still, 70 million people voted for all the things that are so abhorrent about Trump the man and Trump the policies. That really gives me pause, and that will be our long-term project, is figuring out how to address why 70 million people thought the Trump policies were okay.
So Judith, just try to remember all those films. I was alive during that time. You weren't. But all those films of the good Nazis holding up their hands in salute to Hitler. It's not hard for me to imagine what's going on here. This is the last holdout of white power in this country, and that's what this election was all about.
And Alan, do you think the role of Fox News is dominant here? I mean, I have to think that's why a lot of people voted for Trump.
If we didn't have Fox News, somebody would have had to invent something like it,
right,
in my opinion.
Right, right.
In my opinion.
Would have been another propaganda wing.
I agree with you both in many ways, but I will say this. I think we have to be very careful about how we characterize this because, and we've said it here, we've said it before, we didn't get here overnight, and we didn't get here when that guy decided to walk down, or as he was coming down that escalator. We got here because of our economic policies, our and so many of our other policies that have really created, you know, a system of have and have nots. I really feel for the people, you know, in the Midwest that are struggling. You know, I feel for a lot of people who this economy is not working for, and that fear, that insecurity, are elements that drove them to, you know, the words of a person like Donald Trump and prompted them to do that. I don't believe that we have a half of our nation are full of racist people who agree with Donald Trump. I believe that people were drawn to Donald Trump for many reasons, some of which was just wanting a break from the norm. I think Democrats, you know, really have to get back to their roots, right? And not forget that there are people that are struggling, and what we need to do is get into office. And, you know, if it's an infrastructure deal, put together an infrastructure deal that really makes sense for America, you know, and for America in the farthest reaches of places in Wisconsin, you know, Nebraska. But we have to get back to working on behalf of the people and not, you know, whatever jersey we're wearing, you know.
I agree with you. You're right. It isn't the one thing. It's several things. But I think white power is big. Is a big part of it.
Aaron?
Well said, David. You know, rising inequality and the disappearance of opportunity is a very disorienting thing for people. So they don't know where to look. They don't know who to turn to. And I think that is, I said that's why Trump was elected largely, but at the same time, I also think that can be reversed. So when you're distrusting of politicians, when you're disoriented, when you feel like opportunity has been stripped from you, you always point to the other. And, you know, whether it's minorities or automation or globalization. I mean, there's always something to blame, and those people are not wrong. There is something to blame. This is a problem. The current generation, the students that I am teaching in college are going to be the first generation that is more likely to have a lower standard of living than their parents. And that is a first in the past, you know, since the Great Depression and probably before, you know. That's serious. I can understand why people are turning to more extreme viewpoints. It would be nice if President Biden could harness that sentiment and channel it into policies like infrastructure, affordable health care, a universal basic income, guaranteed employment, the whole laundry list. Obviously not at once, but start paving the path so that other presidents and Congresses have something to build on.
All right.
Agreed.
I want to just get to a couple letters. We have to take a break in just a minute. But Catherine writes, who's paying the bill for the supposed Trump lawsuits? Well, that would be the campaign, right? At least in theory.
Yes.
Mary says the fate of democracy could well rest in the shoulders of one woman, Stacey Abrams, who began fairfight.com to fight voter suppression and register more voters. The battle for the Senate is coming down to the two runoffs in Stacey's home state of Georgia. Let's hope Dems learn from using money wisely in these two runoffs, because another 4 years with the Grim Reaper McConnell at the helm of the Senate will accomplish nothing. We desperately need to get the gavel out of his purple hands. Mean, but
harsh,
and yet funny. Mike says, David Soares, you were reading my mind. By Donald Trump bad-mouthing mail-in voting, he may have cut his political throat. He urged his supporters to vote in person. By doing so, Trump built up a lead on election based on the machine count. I wonder if he had not disparaged mail voting, the results might have been different. The Donald outsmarted himself. I don't know that they would have been different, but they probably would have come in differently, right?
It may have been a different outcome, and I attribute this to the boy genius, Jared Kushner. I mean, everything he touches is a disaster. from COVID to telling people to show up in person to vote. So go Jared. See him in federal prison.
Kathy writes, in this country, we vote against things, not for them. Trump voters are voting against socialism. Biden's voters are mostly voting against Trump. And
That's so true. That's so true.
I agree. I think this is a referendum on Trump. It really came down to that.
Let's see. Jason says, we should all be terrified about what the president and Mitch and the Republicans will do during the lame duck session. I predict it will be really lame. Yikes. How much damage can they do? Environmental regulations, pardons. Thank you for being my reality lifeline here in West Michigan. Well, thank you, Jason, and thank you for listening to us in Michigan. And good job, Michigan. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have 15 more minutes with our panel, then over to NPR coverage of the election. We'll be right back after this.
Empty spaces, what are we living for? Abandoned places, I guess we know the score. On and on, does anybody know what we are looking for? Another hero, another mindless crime behind the curtain.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Final call with our wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares. All right. We have some letters to get to here. We go to Christopher. Prediction, when Trump loses, he will continue his rallies over the next few years. People will attend and the media will cover it. The media needs him. We'll see. Peter writes, finally, here in Philadelphia, my daughter, son-in-law, and granddaughter have had their votes counted, and Joe Biden is now in the lead in Pennsylvania. There will be no looking back now. People are honking horns, they're banging pots and pans and cheering in the streets. Our long four-year nightmare is coming to an end. Peter, from on the streets in the city of brotherly love. So that is good news. Kevin writes, Fox News reported on air from Pennsylvania that there have been at least 19 poll watchers in the room since 7 a.m. Tuesday. For all the lies the president casts, Fox News is actually debunking them on air as we speak. That has been interesting, isn't it, Alan? That they called Arizona, which made them really mad, and their coverage has, I mean, it hasn't always been great, but it is somewhat responsible. Alan?
Except they just Maybe put out Alan a memo not saying not. They just put out a memo, Joe, saying Fox News on air people cannot refer to Joe Biden as president elect.
Oh, okay, all right, they're still evil. All right, let's see. Do we lose Alan or is we don't know? All right, we don't know where Alan is.
Maybe he's muted.
I don't know where he went. John says, let's remember that Bush stole the election from Al Gore with some underhanded post-election maneuvers in Florida. And in my book, Bush was as bad or worse than Trump, destabilized the entire world. The next steps will be Trump, the childlike sore loser, doing anything to win. That's all he cares about, winning. Democrats need to be just as single-minded, just as focused, just as ruthless as Trump and the henchmen are and will be. This is not a time for crowing, but a time for doubling down. Let's see. Sean says, just wanted to spend my tremendous debt of gratitude to Stacey Abrams. Her focus and response to a stolen election is a source of great inspiration. We go to Rick. Don't be so joyful about a Biden win. Remember, even the fascists in the White House got more votes than he did last time. We have to heal and come together. I may have read that one already, but it's worth reading again. Diane says, could you state your opinion regarding the possibility that there is a chance that we still may flip the Senate to a Democratic majority? Who would like that one?
I would. There is a very good chance. There are two key runoff elections on January 5th. And, you know, when you're thinking about what to give your family members for the holidays, I would recommend a donation to Raphael Warnock or John Ossoff, the two candidates that are running. It's going to be pretty brutal. And remember, assuming that Biden's lead holds in Georgia, and the Secretary of State in Georgia just said there will be a mandatory recount because it's so narrow. But Georgia had not voted for a Democratic president since 1992. So this is a state in transition where I think there is a very good chance that both of those seats can flip. So I think that the Senate is still in play.
All right. Alan, are you back?
Alan is back.
All right,
Alan,
we lost you. I didn't know.
It was my fault. All my fault, as usual.
Okay.
Sorry.
Let's see. So, yes, good point, Judith, and very and gift-giving tips, too. That's nice.
Joe, can I just say that
if things don't go well with one of the two races in Georgia, and it turns out that the Democrats may be down by one, I think past performance is a predictor, we can hope for Susan Collins.
Oh, that was kind of low. I mean, it was good, but it's still low.
This is the day of joy, David, not needling.
Well, you see, I see it a little differently. I think what's going to happen here is that Mitch McConnell is going to have to deal with a Democratic president. There are lots of things he's going to want, and nobody knows how to play the Senate better than Joe Biden, who lived there for so many years. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a whole new game. And, of course, I've said it many times, God has term limits. You never know what will happen.
Absolutely. There's just a couple of things that I don't quite understand about this whole election, and that is I don't really understand why they haven't called new North Carolina yet. That seems odd to me. I assume the president will win North Carolina. I don't know why they haven't called that. I also don't know why they called, because we were talking about the Senate, which is what brought me along these lines of thinking, I don't know why they haven't called the Mark Kelly race yet.
Are there military ballots, I believe, might be in the Carolinas? I don't know if the military ballots have all been received yet.
I agree, but that's still a large, I mean, that would be a pretty big number to have to overcome. You may be right. It seems like it's a big number.
It's 48.6 versus 50%.
Oh, like, okay, I thought it was 52. Okay, so that's less than I thought. All right. And I'm sorry, in North Carolina?
Yeah, North Carolina.
Yeah, and in the Senate race in Arizona?
I think Kelly's going to win, but you're right, Joe, it is narrowing. So they haven't called the Kelly race. Very certain he's going to win, but and 12%, I think, is not counted there. So you're right to have a little concern.
Okay. Mary says, folks, has anyone entertained the idea the high number of votes for Trump were actually against Kamala Harris, thus the continued racism in this country? David, would you like to address that?
I believe that had something to do with it, but I don't. Look, in my honest opinion, I believe that the moment that the words defund the police were uttered, that was a bouquet of roses for Donald Trump. And I have a feeling that a lot of the suburban folks who would have come out in support of Biden because they just couldn't stomach this president, I believe that the visuals of all the chaos that were captured, broadcast repeatedly on Fox, I believe that turned it around and made this race a lot closer than what ultimately we're all experiencing now. I just believe that.
Let's see. We go to Paul. It's going to be a very heavy-duty effort to detox the nation from Trump. You can be sure that right-wing media will double down and make it miserable, make life miserable for Biden. And don't forget to add Trump TV, Trump reality show, Trump the televangelist. Hell, we can't even save the planet, so we're going to get these people to pull their heads out of their hindquarters. All right. On that,
I've been wrong before, but I got to tell you, I think Trump is done.
Done.
As a newspaper publisher, I know who David might not love. Once said, "Stick a fork in him."
Diane says, "Could you state your opinion regarding the possibility that there is a chance?" I think we answered that on the Senate. We did that already. So we have just about 3 minutes left, and in this moment that we all have together before we go back to NPR coverage and we try to get on with our lives this has been all-consuming for so many of us all week long. Well, it's been all-consuming for the past 4.5 years, hasn't it? But it's been all-consuming certainly for the last week. Any final thoughts you have, Judith? I'll begin with you, our little ray of sunshine.
Well, I want to thank you, Joe, and Alan, and the whole WAMC family for getting us through the past 4.5 years. I mean, it has just been, you know, a disaster. And the sense of community that you create on the radio, I think, kept people connected, kept people engaged. And WAMC, I give credit for the Biden win.
Wow. That's nice, Judah. Thank you. David Soares.
I would have to echo what Judith has just said. I mean, it's so important that, you know, that we continue to have conversations and there's a place for people to gather, to listen, to share, and you certainly provide that.
Who did you pontificate to when you were running? Who did you pontificate to?
Oh, my wife could not. My wife was so thrilled that you guys were welcome, allowing me back into the apartment. She's just been so tired of me. But along the lines of the campaign and other campaigns, I just want to remind folks that there's a lot of local campaigns, and I'd like to congratulate Pat Fahey and John McDonald for their success in winning again. They certainly are amazing public servants, people that I really enjoy partnering with and working with, and so that's important.
All right, I have 30 seconds, so that's 15 seconds each for Alan and Aaron. Alan?
Alan says thank you very much to everybody. Now we've got to make sure it doesn't happen again. Aaron?
Yes, let's make sure it never happens again. Let's also brace ourselves for the litigation and recount and the politics of the transfer of power.
And we'll be here and covering it all and talking about it all with all of you. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.